everyone. This is Chuck Whetstone. Thank you for joining me today on Chuck's Favorite Things, inspiration and motivation from music, movies, memories, and more. Happy Friday to you. Friday, November 13th. Friday the 13th? Oh, my. Don't worry about it. I don't believe in superstition. Just watch out for that black cat and don't walk under a ladder. No, I'm just kidding. No, today is just another normal day, and I hope you're being blessed today by just being alive in this great world of our Creator that He has made. Hey, today's podcast is a continuation of a week-long series we're doing with an interview with a World War II POW. Today is part five, and my dad, who's the interviewee, is being asked some questions today, and he's also, as he shares, he's talking about going on this forced march that the Germans had them go on, and it was 84 days of wearing the same clothes and not getting a bath or a shower, things like that, not washing your clothes either for 84 days, he talked about. He also talks about having lice during this time and being shot at by, you know, the Americans who were strafing them in different locations. All kind of things he's talking about on this 84-day forced march that the Germans made people that were in the POW camp, they had to leave because the Russians were coming in from the east and they did not want to surrender their prisoners. So they made them all march. Those sick and wounded were taken by train or whatever to the other camps, but the rest of them had to walk in the wintertime. Stayed in barns, stayed under trees, stayed in empty factories. He's going to talk to you about that today. Today's podcast is brought to you by Plexus Worldwide. I am a Plexus ambassador. I'm independent. That means I work for myself, but I'm not alone. And I'm happy to report to you today that Plexus is offering free shipping all month on all our products. Go to PlexusChuck.com and look at my products. Try you something. If you haven't tried Plexus, pick out a 7-day sample and try it for 7 days and see if you don't get help from it like I did. I've been off Dr. Pepper for 4 months. Yes, my voice is kind of still weak. I'm getting over this bronchitis. It's just a terrible thing that won't let go. But happy to report, no soft drinks in 4 months. Okay, here is my dad talking on part five of his interview with Mr. Carl Brown. Enjoy this time with my dad.
Path where the men won't see who throwed away a cigarette butt. It didn't taste as good as pipe tobacco, I guarantee you. Then once in a while somebody steal from you. Mm-hmm. And the POWs are mighty skeptical of that. They've threatened them with everything from, we're going to have you court-martialed when you get back to the States. Mm-hmm. We stayed there, let's see, oh yeah, till the next year in either January or February.
Of what, 45?
No, that's going to be in, maybe 40, yeah, maybe mm-hmm. 45.
Yeah.
This was near the end of it, and we got used to whatever's going on there, and the German government says that, I think, one from the east and one from the west, and our allies is fixing to come in, mm-hmm. so we got to move you. We're not going to put you on a train, except those who are sick. They sent them to the officers' camp. Mm-hmm. We're going to walk. You're going to spend the night in a barn. My clothes existed of an army shirt, a pair of breeches, a German pair of shoes with knobs on them, and it's cold. Mm-hmm. I'd already learned to wrap myself up with paper and then underneath the clothes. It worked. One night we stopped and it was couldn't have no barn. So we slept outside, and that night it snowed. Okay, just one time, but we'd move from town to town, so many kilometers or whatever, and then find a barn and stay there. And you don't have no light and all that stuff, you know, it's kind of aggravating. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have diarrhea.
Roughly how many men started on the march?
I'm going to say 9,000.
Okay.
We had a doctor that volunteered to go to our camp instead of going to the officer's camp. He said, I can do more good, and he did. Oh, I have something else I need to back up on. I had a real bad boil on my rear end, and I went to the doctor. I went to the medical station. They say, we don't have any medicine. Said, I'll do something else. He was a British guy. He took a needle and drawed blood out of different places, and he'd squirt that in, oh, maybe five times around that thing. And he... I wouldn't have believed that.
They didn't just decide to lance it and try to let the inflammation out or anything? Or?
No. That's all I did. No, they didn't have medicine, so... So when we got ready to move, we didn't know it was going to be 550 miles by foot. People keep dropping out of the file. Well, we didn't know whether he was killed or not. It might have been. Yeah, they don't care whether you make it or not.
And of course, this is in the last... Well, you don't know it's in the last months of the war, but this is, for the Germans, this is... It's January, February, we're coming towards the end.
Yeah. Well, it was May then, I believe. But anyway, I had a group with me, about three men that worked together trying to purchase something from a German or something. And they'd do my fighting while I did the bargaining. And it worked a lot of times. Oh, you just don't want to get into it. I told you the other day, 84 days with lice. 84 days without a real good bath. Same clothes, haven't washed. I mean, the clothes.
Sure.
Because it didn't have more. And it was cold, so it didn't... didn't really create all that much trouble. But how I got the lice was, I was on this trip and I see a beautiful scarf down there on the ground. Red Cross sent it, somebody. And I said, oh, he lost it. I said, good, I need that. I wrapped that thing around my neck and they started multiplying. I tell a story that makes people amused about whenever I'd go to bed at night, that the lice had a, they love baseball. I said, now when I'd get laying down right for to sleep, I feel one of them run up here, run from home to first. And I'll feel him move on over that way, and that way, and that way. And he'd come in for a home run, and I just keep him picking. But I would rather have one louse on me than have one flea. It's just, the flea hurts.
Sure.
And I'm sure this other does too. But when we... See, 550 miles, and we left in February, and we didn't get liberated till May 15th, I believe. So it was quite an ordeal, and we tried to bargain with anybody. One young lady, looked like she might have been 20. I said, "How was it us brought for a coffin? Do you have bread to sell?" She told me in English, said, "No, I don't have any bread to sell." Now, over there, they believe in strict discipline in our service. And that commander, he's nearly got power enough to kill you, just himself.
Sure.
I saw a private just bowing down to him. I mean, really getting serious. But I think maybe he might have let him go some, but they are really strict, and they believe in separation of rank. So we didn't have to work. But those that are of a lesser rank, they had to work. One of my friends had tried to break off and get out of there, you know. And we passed through a field one day, and there was a bunch of workers over there just to work. And I said, "Well, look yonder. You see that?" I went up to him. "What are you doing here?" He said, don't even act like you know me." George Collins. And he'd been... Well, he was the one on my crew, the last one. And he'd been trying to escape so long that he did. He didn't get nowhere. Well, he's been dead for a long time.
Was he ever recaptured? I mean, he was out there in that field.
Oh, yeah, he was recaptured. Yeah. It's hard to get away from him in the wintertime. They'll report you in a minute if they see you. And they can tell how you hold a cigarette. You hold it like that. And if you don't do it, that's bad. And also eating with your fork, I believe.
Yeah, well, Europeans, they eat what we would call left-handed, from what I understand.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Where we swap forks when we cut our meat and stuff, they don't, as I understand it. I've been told. I've read that. But, I've heard that same story, that just by the way you eat or hold your fork or whatever.
Or say something. They got you. I've had two searches by the Gestapo.
You had mentioned to ask you about that. And I was waiting for a good time to ask, and now's a good time.
One man would come in. You'd always know who he was because he's fat. They didn't eat like that in that regular army. He had us all stripped. He would inspect us like a toenail, in my ears, even in your rear end. He looked, he had me hold up my shoe, my foot. He looked it all over. And then I had it done again later on by another Gestapo agent. But there, he was a Gestapo. So as we was going down that road, I decided that I just had to have something else to eat. So it was on the highway. There was a dandelion there. I don't know whether it did or not. It might have been. Anyway, I got that thing, tried to eat the dandelion. I just couldn't do it. Don't taste good. So as we'd go down one of those the P-51, mm-hmm. he came in over where we were, real down low, and we thought we'd already been bombed. Mm-hmm. And there's a railroad track out there beside us, and he went over and bombed that thing. Mm-hmm. And we've had close calls, even got to where it was strafing by Americans. They just didn't know the difference.
Sure.
And as we'd go from one place to another, we didn't know what in the world was going to happen. And we went in one time to an old aircraft factory. That's where we stayed. Mm-hmm. A cemetery was right next to us, and there's a bunch of B-25s came over, a whole squadron of them. They'd always told me, if you'll hold your finger up and see where it's falling, you'll know whether it's going to hit you or not. Well, I held my finger up, and he veered just a little bit. Mm-hmm. I felt good, but I was out there in the graveyard. And I got behind a tall tombstone, excuse me, a tall tombstone. You helping me, Rosie? Okay. And they had gone down and bombed a patch that had plenty of fuel in it, in barrels. Mm-hmm. They got them, had a good fire. This factory we was in, we think that it had nitroglycerin in it. And we found out that it was an aircraft factory. Mm-hmm. And my friend, he found a bayonet there. So he took that, he even brought it home. He got it home, but I don't know how he did it. Well, that was a scare, but that's not the only one we've had.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with my dad today, part five, of an interview with a World War II POW. I'm very proud of my dad. He's no longer with us. After this interview, he only lived about 7 more months. And very proud of his heritage, very proud of who he became as a man, and how he had to grow up as a man quickly when he was 19 years old, being a POW in Germany, away from family and friends and his wife. Okay, until tomorrow, this is Chuck Whetstone. I will see you in part 6 tomorrow as Dad Talks, continuation of being liberated. Most likely, I think number 6 is about being liberated, and you'll learn a whole lot. Go to my website, chucksfavoritethings.com, to notice some of the photographs and documents I'm putting up there concerning his time as a POW. Until tomorrow, Chuck Whetstone, signing out. Bye-bye.